You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's Live Talk. I am your host, Marshall Derry. This week on the Corrections Connection, we will be looking at officer safety training in community corrections. Joining us today to discuss this topic is Dr. Mario Paparozzi, a professor in the College of New Jersey's Department of Law and Justice. Dr. Paparozzi was an employee of the New Jersey Department of Corrections for 26 years. In 1998, he retired from his position and accepted a faculty appointment at the College of New Jersey. After 2 years as a faculty member, he took a leave of absence to serve as chairman of the New Jersey State Parole Board. After 2 years in this role, Paparozzi decided he could do more to advance community corrections by returning to the college, cutting short his 6-year appointment to the board. Welcome to today's Live Talk, Dr. Paparozzi.
Thank you for having me today on such an important topic.
Because this is such a large topic and there's so much information, I think it may just help the audience and myself to just kind of jump right in, and I'll just feed you a question if that's all right.
That's sure fine with me.
The first question we have are there, do you feel like there's any increased dangers for community corrections officers? And if so, what are they? What are a few of them?
I think there are increased dangers primarily because it's pretty obvious that as years have gone by in my 30-year career, there have been more and more guns available on the streets. And
right.
The gang activity that has picked up and flourished first initially with the crack cocaine epidemic and so on, and now just moving into other organized criminal activities in many communities, has really heightened the danger for being out into communities where crime occurs.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you feel like has changed over time and why they're so prevalent now as opposed to in the past?
Well, again, I think a lot of it has to do with the dynamics of the drug market and the drug trade and the crack cocaine epidemic and so on. But the gang activity cannot be downplayed. Virtually every city, even medium-sized cities, suffering under very, very serious gang-type problems. And under those kinds of issues, you have young kids being recruited into gangs, young kids who typically don't have a strong social conscience, who really maybe don't have a lot of empathy towards other folks and so on, running around with very powerful weapons. The other thing that's changed, too, is the type of weapon over the years, the semi-automatics and the availability of those kinds of guns, as opposed to the routine Saturday night special, which maybe 30 years ago was the common gun on the street. But there are many, many young people out there, many people who are under the influence of drugs and alcohol, again, associated with gang activities, a lot of it involving guns, putting everybody in proximity to them in danger. Of course, probation and parole officers and other community corrections workers have to go into those communities to do their job on a daily basis, and that puts them at great risk. Over the years, and I don't know if this is the time when you want to get into this, if it isn't, just cut me off, but over the years, what I've seen in many jurisdictions is the way to deal with danger in communities has been to tell probation and parole officers not to go into those communities if they didn't feel safe. I mean, that's just frankly unacceptable.
Right.
I think if you were to ask taxpayers or if you ask practicing professionals in this business, should you avoid going into those neighborhoods where you need to go do your job in order to maintain your own safety? Well, yeah, but should you avoid doing it and then also expect to do a good job? I think not.
Right. Do you feel like agencies are preparing probation and parole officers for these types of dangers nowadays? Do you feel like they're adequately giving them the skills to go out there and kind of deal with these dangers?
You know, that's a very broad question, so I'm going to answer it in a very broad way, keeping in mind there are probably numerous exceptions. In general, things have gotten a lot better in the last 10 to 15 years in terms of recognition of the problem of officer safety and training.
Mm-hmm.
But also, in general, while some agencies are doing a very good job, many agencies are not. And many agencies are still struggling with, for example, whether officers should be armed or whether they shouldn't be armed, whether they should get police-type training in addition to the counseling-type training that they get as probation parole officers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still struggling with that as a profession. So in general, we've made a lot of progress, but also in general, we are woefully inadequate across the board in terms of being where some agencies are already in terms of providing that very, very aggressive public safety type of a component for the probation parole officer to perform in the community and also to be safe while doing that job.
Right. And I guess a reasonable follow-up to that question is, what you feel like, what elements should be a part of safety training for community corrections?
First and foremost, we need to really, again, and you know, this was the case even outside of the training for safety issue, we need to pay attention to who it is that is a probation parole officer or community corrections officer. The first defense against any threat to a probation parole officer is their own verbal skills, their own thinking skills.
Right.
And we are paying attention to that, recognizing that, and doing more about it. But it's naive to think that that's enough. And so I think the other things that we've moved to in some jurisdictions more so than in others would be training on communications devices, training on, you know, how to use cell phones in case of an emergency,
right.
But more importantly, on how to use the two-way radios, the kind that police use out on the streets, in order to call for help, in order to, you know, alert the local authorities that you're in danger and that there's a problem going on.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things we're doing more of. As you get closer to restraining people, as you get closer to arming probation and parole officers, the field, it gets really queasy about that still. And we still really haven't nailed down whether or not we, as a field, we want to go in that direction or whether we don't. Some people think that if you were, for example, to go the full ride and arm your parole and probation officers and give them the skills that you need, that they'll no longer be able to be probation parole officers. I frankly never believed that, and I still don't believe that.
Why is that?
Well, I don't believe it's the gun that makes you not balanced. Balanced meaning a balance between treatment and law enforcement activities. That, by the way, probation and parole are, by definition, treatment plus surveillance plus enforcement.
Right.
And so if one person can do all of those things, fine. If you're not going to have one person do all of those things, then you have to have a very coordinated system with other agencies where the probation parole function is being performed so that all of those functions get done. And I really do think that I have known probation parole officers personally over the years that were very social work oriented on the one hand, or another group that were very law enforcement on the other hand. And when they became armed, it didn't change who they were fundamentally. It's not the hardware, it's the mentality.
Right.
And I think if we had proper training and proper philosophical grounding, we could probably pull this off. I think if we don't have proper philosophical grounding and proper training in terms of treatment, surveillance, and enforcement, and that balanced approach that's required, absent that strong philosophical base, if you give somebody a gun, they'll look down and they'll think, wow, that's who I am. I must be a police officer.
Right.
And they're not. They're probation and parole officers.
Well, given what you talked about with social services or something like that, do you feel like other organizations should be playing a greater role in the content of people's training in parole or probation officers, i.e., you know, public health or more mental health services in that training?
I absolutely think training needs to be bolstered in all of these regards. Yes, we happen to be talking about safety training, and so we're focusing on bolstering that. But I'm glad you raised that issue, because it is the formula, again, and in this order, treatment first, surveillance around that treatment that you're providing, and then enforcement for the noncompliant and dangerous offender. And in that order. So the training for a probation and parole officer has to include strong skill building in assessments for mental health problems, assessments for drug and alcohol problems, assessments for violence type issues, and then developing a strong case plan around those, what we call criminogenic needs, those need factors that we have to address in order to get you to not be criminal anymore.
Right.
And that has to be strong. It would be stupid for the field, and the field has embraced not going in this direction, which is a good thing, to abandon that whole side of who we are as probation and parole officers and simply go into the safety piece. This is not an either-or. Probation and parole are a unique animal. They are in a unique place in the criminal justice system, primarily because we're dealing with involuntary offenders who we know have a track record for breaking the law, and we have to work with them, provide services so that they don't become recidivists again, and at the same time, we have to be safe while we're doing it.
Right.
And while I'm at it, let me add that this whole safety issue, in my view, always has been and still is, a matter of an occupational safety issue. You don't deal with safety issues and arming parole and probation officer issues simply because you want to create another police department. That's not where we're going with this. We're creating it so that we have an environment within which we can be really good probation and parole officers.
Right.
Feel safe while we're doing it.
As opposed to another police force.
Well, correct. I was early in my career, in the very early 70s, I was a parole officer on the streets of North New Jersey. And I would go out and do my home visits when I was a parole officer out in the field in those days. And to be safe, I would do my home visits, but I would do them between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. in the morning because it was quiet, most people were asleep, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I got credit for going to do my field work. But in the eyes of doing a good job as a parole officer, the question that is begged is that really a good job? It's not.
Right.
A good job is when I'm out there, when I need to be out there, whenever that is, whether it's the afternoon, the evening, a Saturday, and so on.
Right.
But the typical word on the street was, for some of the housing projects, some of the higher crime areas was, well, you better not go there, it's too dangerous, or don't go after 3 o'clock because it's wild out there. Don't go on the first of the month because that's when welfare checks come,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so on and so on. All of these things that no one really likes to talk about and put on the table, which I call professional skeletons in our closet. But if you go to Milwaukee, if you go to Newark, if you go to Detroit, if you go to Cleveland, if you go to Orlando, there's a common bond among probation and parole officers, and in an instant, we all know what the other's talking about.
Right. If you're just joining us, we're talking about probation and parole officer safety with Dr. Mario Paparozzi, professor in the Department of Law and Justice at the College of New Jersey. Now, our next question is, where do you think budget restrictions factor in to increased or new training? What type of effect the budget's having on that?
It has been historic in corrections in general that when budgets get cut, training is first to go.
Right.
And everyone knows that. And everyone also knows, for example, when prison budgets get hit hard, we lose classrooms and teachers and so on before we lose security-type functions.
Right.
So is funding an issue when it comes to any training? Absolutely. And given that, when funding is a problem, safety training as part of the overall training function will surely take a hit. Now, that's not a good thing, but it's often weighed against the critical decision that has to be made. Do I lose staff positions? Do I lose equipment, the purchase money, or do I provide some bolstered training? It's like the movie, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Sophie's Choice,
mm-hmm.
when she had to choose between saving one of her children or the other.
Right.
That's a choice no one wants to make, but sometimes, and we should all know this in the business as administrators and even as line staff, tough decisions have to be made that we don't like. We don't live in an ideal world. And so that when you're talking about priorities of where money should be cut, it's always a struggle. Yes, training is always one of the first to get hit. And that's an unfortunate thing, but I would argue that we can't indict that blanket reduction in training budget cuts without weighing what's going on inside of an individual agency in considering where we should make our cuts.
Absolutely. Now, on the budget aspect of that, do you feel like most agencies can train for new threats, or do you feel like they're kind of, you know, quote-unquote economically handcuffed by this whole budget issue?
Well, look, you know, let me answer that very frankly. In our business over the years, and in probably many businesses, the same dynamic occurs. What I have noticed is that when funding gets cut, we get depressed. When we get depressed, sometimes we get cynical. When we get cynical, sometimes we say, well, we can't do anything.
Right.
And so we sit on our hands. That's rarely, if ever, the case.
Right.
I think that even in the face of severe budget cuts, and in my personal career and in my personal recollection, there's always something you can do. It calls for creativity. It calls for collaboration with other agencies. It calls for maybe getting training with other police agencies, other social service agencies, building partnerships, et cetera, et cetera. It's not the ideal, always, but there are things one can do if one has the will to do it, as opposed to saying, well, I'm angry because we got cut, so I'm going to throw in the towel.
Right. What advice, the last question is, what advice do you have to agencies to better prepare their officers for work in the field?
The advice that I would have for any agency is to sit down, any probation parole agency, community corrections agency, sit down and decide who you are and what your mission is. Don't decide whether you should be armed or not armed, whether you should have safety training or not in a vacuum. First decide what the destination is. If the destination is long-term public safety and short-term risk management of offenders, then I compel folks to sit and look backwards at what you'll need to get there. That will dictate the kind of training you need and the kind of equipment officers should have. If you decide your mission is to sit in your office and have banker's hours and not go out into the field, well, this whole discussion is moot. But if you decide that you need to actively or proactively supervise offenders in communities in order to deliver a good service, a valuable service to taxpayers, then in the final analysis, no one has to say whether you should be armed or not. It will be apparent.
Right. Well, that concludes today's live talk. I would like to thank Dr. Mario Paparosi of the College of New Jersey for joining us today. And thank you to our audience as well. For more information on officer safety in community corrections, be sure to read this week's articles on corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Marshall Dury.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.